we are... Sorry? We are on page Shin Nun Zion in the Nishmas Avram. And we have a few interesting topics to discuss tonight. We're at number 6, where it says Timas HaOchel, and the issue of tasting the food to make sure that it's okay for the patient. This is a minor issue, but, you know, it's in our way. He says, Ach, mutter lemevashel litom min hatashil. He says, the person who is cooking the food for the dangerously ill patient is allowed to taste the food they're preparing for the patient to check and make sure it's okay for the patient. This is considered part of preparing it for him. And even though you'll say, well, really, is tasting it such a necessity? The answer is, that's the way you prepare food. Hatashil hu muktza. And then he says something separate, which he's going to come back to. This is, I think I mentioned last time that a lot of what he says in a particular section is redundant, because he'll touch it here and then he'll touch it again in another couple of paragraphs. So he says, the food is muktza, that you prepare for this ill patient. Obviously not muktza for this patient, but for everybody else. So you're not allowed to move it other than for this patient. But that assumes that it wasn't edible raw. If the food was edible raw, then it's not muktza, because what makes this food muktza is the fact that it wasn't edible. But if it was, no issue. And also, if the patient was ill before Shabbos, and therefore I intended to prepare the food for him for Shabbos all along, then you're allowed to handle the food, even for purposes other than this patient's care. You know, I want to move it from place to place, or, as we'll see in a second, or in a couple of seconds, the case he's going to discuss is clearing it off when the patient is done. Do I say that this is muktza? Because it has no function for anybody else, and it was only allowed for the sake of this patient. And that's what he's going to have to discuss. We'll see it in number 8. That's where we'll get to it. But first, he says in number 7, Motzai Shabbos. After Shabbos is over, I heated up food for this dangerously ill patient. Shabbos ends. Normally, the rule is that if food was cooked on Shabbos inappropriately, then I have to wait after Shabbos long enough that it could have been prepared after Shabbos before I'm allowed to eat it. Right? The concern is that if a non-Jew cooks food on Shabbos, then I might come to ask him to do so, which I'm not allowed to do. So by eliminating my benefit from it, by saying, well, you can't benefit from it until it could have been done after Shabbos, that will be an incentive for me to wait till after Shabbos to ask him anyway.
So you're saying if it takes an hour to make the food, then you can wait an hour after Shabbat and then you could eat it?
That's normally the case.
Okay.
So the question is, would I need to wait for that in this circumstance? So he says, B'motzai Shabbos mutar lebari le'achol min hanosa me'atashol miyad. He says, after Shabbos, you're allowed to eat from the food right away. You do not need to wait long enough that it's been done after Shabbos. And there's no room to question the kashrus of the kalim, the utensils with which it was cooked. So before I get to the kashrus of the utensils, which I'll explain, his general point is there's no reason to wait, and why don't you need to wait?
Because it's extra.
Hmm. Why don't I need to wait after Shabbos? Well, it isn't the function of muktza, though.
Because it was made properly.
Because it was made properly. There was nothing wrong with what I did. Again, the reason why you normally need to wait is because it would be inappropriate to ask someone to do this on Shabbos. In a normal case. But when you're dealing with a patient, we want you to do that.
But it's okay for the patient to eat it. You're saying it's also okay for others to eat it?
After Shabbos. Immediately after Shabbos. Because there was nothing inappropriate about the way it was made. In terms of his point about the kli, the utensil, so the issue is found in source Aleph on the side sheet that I gave you. The Mishnah Berurah explains the background on this. He says, Kasav HaMagen Avram, B'Shem HaRashba. The Magen Avram wrote, quoting the Rashba, going back to the 14th century, Degam HaKedera Shabishel Ba B'Shabbos Asura Lo Levashel Ba. That normally, if someone cooks on Shabbos, right, if someone cooks on Shabbos inappropriately, not dealing with a patient, but just in general, some Jew cooked on Shabbos, so I am not allowed to use that pot. Why? Because it absorbed prohibited food.
Not allowed to use a pot ever?
it's treif, is what he's saying. Wow. Just like if you had cooked pig in the pot, right? So there's pig absorbed in the wall, and therefore I can't cook with that because now whenever I cook, some little taste of that is now infecting my food. So too, there is food that is prohibited. The food that was cooked illegally on Shabbos, again, not the patient case, just the general case. There's food that I'm not allowed to benefit from that's absorbed in the wall, and it will exude that taste into the food that I'm going to eat. Mimneshi blumi davar ha'asur lo, he says, it absorbed this prohibited item. Vidavka, but then he continues to say, Vidavka hamavasha labari, that's specifically where it was cooked on Shabbos for a healthy person. But if you're cooking for a patient, then the pot is fine. And the reason the pot is fine is because the food is inherently mutter. It's inherently permitted. We don't want you using it because then you might come to ask someone to do this for you, or you might come to add, whatever. But it's permitted food. And that's his point. Last few words back on Shin Nun Zayin. V'imchal yom tov v'motzai Shabbos. Let's say it's Shabbos, and we cook for the patient, and tonight is Yontif. Because inevitably, if there's going to be a dangerously ill patient around the house, it's going to be on like a three-day Yontif. That's just the way life works. So, Asur Labari Lechol Min HaOchel HaNishar Gam B'Yom Tov Rishon. Yeah, we're on page 2 of Chesna. So he says, a healthy person would not be allowed to eat the food that remained from Shabbos into Yom Tov. And this has to do with a completely different rule, which is that Shabbos is not allowed to prepare for Yom Tov. I can't use Shabbos as a prep day for Yom Tov. Right? All those rules about preparing from one day to the next and so on, waiting till after candle lighting, that's what he's talking about. So therefore, I can't say, well, that was from Shabbos, today is now a new day. That will not actually work for this. V'ayim b'prima gadim, and then he quotes you the prima gadim. The prima gadim is a commentary on the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. And the prima gadim eshal avram sivkat and beis dileinyan mayim shehuchmu b'shabbos v'nitztanenu yesh lahakel b'motzai Shabbos. He says, if you have water that was heated up on Shabbos for a patient, but then it cooled off, so you could be lenient about using it motzai Shabbos after Shabbos. And his point is an interesting point, which is that when you're dealing with water, water is not treated like other foods. Meaning, if I cooked food on Shabbos for the patient, even if it cooled off, it is considered to have undergone a change. However, water, once you heat it and then it cools off, goes back to being water. There's no change that we can notice within it. And therefore, there is no concern about waiting after Shabbos at all, even if it retains some of the heat. Yeah, from the warming, it's going to be fine.
Is this the same rule as what we said previously, that the food is edible when it's like in its original state, and you cook it to another state, then if it's like you can still eat it, like it's not as strict, like you can still eat it after.
I'm not sure which thing you're thinking of. Are you thinking about what we said before regarding muktza?
Yeah.
Well, it's for sure not muktza, because it was edible raw.
So it's the same principle for water.
Well, not so much because it was edible before, because they're not discussing the muktzah question now. They're discussing the question of whether it's considered to be food that was cooked on Shabbos. And he's saying, effectively, water can become uncooked. You know, they came out with a technology a couple of years ago to unboil an egg by changing the folds of the proteins, hypothetically. They can change the way the proteins are folded, and you can unboil an egg. But within, like, the world of normal human beings, you can't uncook food that has been cooked. The exception is water just goes back to being what it was. The question then arises, well, what if you have soup? It's basically water, but there's something in it. It was heated, then it's cooled off. Is there any change? Has anything actually changed about it? And that depends, I think, on the nature of the soup somewhat. But that's his statement. Okay.
Yeah. I'm still stuck on a little bit that if food is prepared in a kosher pot, but it was prepared on Shabbat, not for a sick person, that pot becomes treif. Just because, I don't know, like you go and you rent a kosher apartment with a kosher kitchen. So it never even occurred to me that I assumed everybody keeps kosher, but that in fact, even if they had just cooked kosher food but cooked it on Shabbat, that pot itself would now be
treif.
How would you know? You have to re-kosher everything before you
use it? It's an interesting problem. it's an interesting problem. I didn't come prepared to discuss the ins and outs of it, and you know, how concerned you have to be. But there are two. There are actually two rulings of the Rashba like this. There's this one regarding food that having been cooked in on Shabbos, and the other is Bishul Akum. Right, Bishul Akum is the rabbinic prohibition against eating food cooked by someone who isn't Jewish. So it has nothing to do with whether the food is kosher or not. We understand that the reason why that's prohibited is because you develop close relationships with them, and that's what we want to avoid. The food can be 100% kosher. We gave him the ingredients ourselves. We watched him cook the entire time. It's still non-kosher. So the question is, what's the status of the pot afterwards? The food's 100% kosher, but it's prohibited to me, and it's now absorbed in the walls. So once again, based on what the Rashba is saying, you'll say the pot is now a treif pot. And again, I rent the apartment. It's a kosher apartment, but you know, some non-Jew rented it before me and was careful with all the ingredients and everything else. Is this now treif?
Well, then how can food that you buy in the grocery store that some mass-produced package of food be kosher if there's non-Jews working?
So if it's produced under kosher supervision,
but by non-Jews.
Right, but if it's produced under kosher supervision, then the agency will make sure that a Jew lights the fire, turns on the oven, or whatever it is. That's one of the things they have to watch out for.
Like they see a lot of good bugs.
I am not commenting on that one, but you're on audio now.
What's my colostrum?
So to sum up what we've said, the number one, we said you're allowed to taste the food for the patient. Number two, we said the food is not. Is muksa for others than the patient, and we're going to come back to that actually right now in number eight. We said that after Shabbos you're allowed to eat the food right away. We said that the utensils it's absorbed in are kosher. There's no problem there of the kashrut of the utensils. And we said that even though you're allowed to eat it right after Shabbos, not if the after Shabbos is Yom Tov. Okay, so look at number eight now where he discusses the muksa problem. I'm really waiting for something coming up next. There's something that I'm hoping we'll get to.
But I see so many little problems. I've cooked food on Shabbat for a sick person. It's perfectly appropriate. I'm not serving any of this food to anyone else. But if somebody unknowingly came in and saw this food and didn't realize and ate it, and they're not sick, it wasn't intended to be eaten by them, but they ate it. So therefore...
Nothing.
Therefore nothing. Okay, so it doesn't make my pot unkosher that a person who wasn't sick ate the food.
The reason why the pot is not unkosher is because the food was cooked for somebody for whom it's permitted.
And only the amount for them, because we already went over that a couple weeks ago. I didn't make extra with the intention that someone ate it.
Right. That would be a very interesting question. What if I did make extra with intent for somebody? How would that mess with everything we're talking about?
A sick person never ate it. They never woke from their nap.
You're making extra.
I'm making extra. In other words, I cooked for the patient, but I heated up more, which I wasn't supposed to do.
Status of the pot.
Yeah, that's my question. Is the status of the pot? I think that's an interesting question. By the way, the question that Albert had asked originally, the question of the single unit meals in the hospital setting. So I asked Rabbi Dr. Abraham about it. He felt low pluk that we wouldn't make any distinction and say, no, if it's heated up for the patient, others are not supposed to eat it. And the guest in the hospital room should not eat the leftovers out of the tray. Okay, let that be a warning. It looks so good. So
it's very practical. It's very practical. Yeah. Right? You walked all over.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't disagree. Okay, so number eight is the muktzah question and the practical applications of it. He says, "Tavshil shenis bashel b'Shabbos avur chola shebesakana." You have food that was cooked on Shabbos for a dangerously ill patient. Im omnam chola bo bayom. So, if in fact he became ill that day, and therefore you didn't designate the food before Shabbos, the tavshil asoy mechomerim asher lo hayu reuyim laachilam yibaladeya bishul, and the food is made of ingredients chomerim materials. The food is made of ingredients which were not edible, other than for the cooking, so therefore they were truly muktzah. Kagon, for example, tavshil shabasar, you cook the meat, because that's what we do for dangerously ill patients. O dagim, or fish, o yirakos, or vegetables, she'enem ne'acham lo bishul, which would not be edible raw. Harehu mukhtza. So indeed, the food is mukhtza. Va'asur l'talta lo shalol l'tzarech achola, and you wouldn't be allowed to move it, other than for the sake of the patient. Aval, but then he says, but, muter l'salek es shiarei ha'ochel. You'll be allowed to remove the remnants of the food. In other words, he finished eating. There's still stuff there. Am I allowed to clear his plate, or do I worry that it's mukhtza? He says, you're allowed to clear it away. Oh, afilu lahachni sam lamekarer. You could go put it in the fridge. Im hem alulim limshoch zvuvim v'charakim. If you left it out, you would develop either flies or bugs or whatever. You don't want to do that. And if he was ill before Shabbos, then there's no question. You're allowed to move the food, even if it's not for the sake of this patient. Okay, so that's the mukhtza discussion. He says, don't worry, you are allowed to move the food away. You're not supposed to let bugs develop. Okay. 9 is chimum mayim, and the issue of heating up water in order to bathe him. So he says, "Chol sheyesh bo sakana asher harchatza b'mayim chamim t'ranein utchazek es gufo v'tashpia l'tov ha'matzav b'yuso." You have a patient who's dangerously ill, and bathing him with hot water will rejuvenate him. T'ranein ra'ananim means to be fresh. It will freshen and it will strengthen his body, and it will have a good impact in general on his health. And I think the reason why, well, actually, he's going to say it in the next line, "Afshal yidei mniyasa." Even though failure to bathe him wouldn't endanger him. It's not that you're saving him from harm by bathing him. This isn't medicine. But you're going to improve his standing health-wise. He'll feel better, and that will enable him to better cope with whatever the illness is. Moshe Feinstein was very big on this point in his Tshuvos. He talks a lot about the fact that when the patient is more comfortable, better rested, without pain, and so on, they're better able to fight off whatever it is that's attacking their systems. So I think that's what he's drawing on here. He says, if giving him a hot bath would help him feel better and have a good impact on his health situation, so if you don't have hot water, and you don't have a non-Jew around who could heat it up, because it would be better if the non-Jew were to heat it. So a Jew could heat up the water for him on Shabbos. Yeah.
So can you, as a healthcare or whatever family member, make that assessment whether the hot water would benefit him? Does it have to be he or she that requests it?
Right. So I'd go back to something from when we did the series a couple of years ago that he wrote in his introduction to Shin Chav Ches, which is that ultimately the people on the scene have to make the best educated decision they can. Hopefully the person on the scene has some medical background. But if not, then you go based on your own assessment.
Okay.
Yeah. The assumption always when we're dealing with Pikuach Nefesh is when in doubt, go do it.
Okay.
Mutter, so he says a Jew would be allowed to do it. Im ha-davar efshari, if it's possible, and I think it should be possible, yakbid shalola chameim es hamayim b'shabas ad l'chum shayat zoled esbo. You should not heat it up to the point where a hand would be scalded. That's generally good advice when it comes to bathing patients. I think that's in general something we'd go for. So yad saled esbo, the temperature that is offered for that varies. Some will render that at 108 degrees, 13 degrees, 120 degrees, all Fahrenheit I'm talking about. So he says that you should keep the temperature of the water lower than the temperature of Yad Saled Esbo, and the reason for that is simply because you will avoid being in violation of cooking, at least on a biblical level, that way. V'adif lachem l'rachitzas achola kamut gedola shamayim asher ein hayat zoledes b'hem. Me'asher kamut mitzumtzemet shamayim chaimim me'od she'yur b'vula achar mikin b'mayim karim. He says, you know, there are two ways to approach a bath. One way to approach it is, I'm going to heat up a lot of heat up a little water, really hot, and then dilute it with cold. The other way to do it is heat up a lot of water that's lower than the boiling point, or lower than, in this case, this magic, you know, cooking temperature. So he says better to heat up a lot of water, even though you're heating up a larger volume, but you keep it below that point, because that's actually the trigger for a biblical violation of cooking. So we'd rather that you heat up a lot of water, even though you're doing more acts of heating, as long as you keep it below that mark. That's the better way to do it. If you want, I have a pen here. Okay. But that's the statement.
This is from a hotel in Jerusalem.
Okay. In Bikesh me akum lachamim mayim avurchola sheyesh bo sakana hazakuk lakos tei. Let's say the patient is dangerously ill, and you want to give the patient tea, and you ask a non-Jew to heat up water for it. So this goes back to something we've already talked about. V'nimtza al hakira kumkum hamalei b'mayim yosim b'kidei tzorcho shel hachola. There's a kettle, it's filled with water, more than what the patient needs, and it's sitting on the burner. V'ha'akum adlik esh tachtav, and what the non-Jew is going to do is he's going to turn on the burner. So ein tzarach lishpoch es hamayim ha'odfim lefnei she'ha'akum madlik es ha'esh. So you don't need to dump out the unnecessary water, right? Remember, with food, we said we don't want you cooking extra. But here, the non-Jew is only going to do one action, and that's just turning on the burner. And it's the non-Jew who is doing it, which takes it down a level in terms of any concerns. So he's allowed to leave it as is. Ach aser labari lehenos mimayim elu b'shabbos. But you, as a Jew, would not be allowed to benefit from it on Shabbos. Are we clear? I'm going a little bit fast because these are all small issues, and also because I really want to get to 11. I don't know if we will or not. 11 is really a great philosophical issue, just to tell you, in case we don't get to it. But 11 is the question of, I don't have hot food where I am, or I don't have a light, or whatever it is that I have for the patient where I am. There's a neighbor next door who does, but they're sleeping. Do I wake up the neighbor to get it? Or do I break Shabbos in order to provide it myself? And it's a larger philosophical question about what it is that we're doing on behalf of the patient in the eyes of halacha, and what the obligations that people have are. So I'm hoping we can get to it. But if not, at least you know the question that I'm hoping to get to. It'll bring you back hopefully next week. So that was number 9. Number 10, the issue of turning off the hot water tap. Dud chashmali. So you have an electric boiler. Im ein mayim chamim. If there is no hot water, mutter gam lahafil hadud chashmali. You're allowed to activate the boiler. You see boiler there in parentheses. Hagam shemis chamim im bo mayim bekamut gedola yoter mishenachus lachitzas achola. So you're allowed to turn on the boiler, even though you know that will heat up far more water than the patient needs. In other words, like we're talking like a building boiler. Right?
You're not the dude button. Now I get it. I never understood why that was called dude.
The dude button. Yeah. Yes. Now you know. No, you thought it was some weird English thing.
I had no idea why that. But there's no hot water to take a shower if you don't turn on the dude button. But yes. I have no clue what. Now I see.
Okay.
Chashmali. Now I get it.
So, well, there's dude chashmali and then there's dude shemesh, the solar one.
Clearly, I was not in the right apartment, not in the eco apartment.
So the statement that he's making here about this dud chashmali is, we're not going to tell you empty out the boiler, you know, other than for the amount that the patient is going to need. You're doing this single action of turning on the boiler for it, and that, he says, is okay. Next question, though, is, I turn on the tap. Water comes out. That means cold water is going in, and that's going to get heated up, and it's not for the sake of the patient. Right, the cold water that enters. So he says, "Muter lahotzi mayim chamim midur chashmali letzara chol sheyesh bo sakana." He says you're allowed to take hot water out of this electric boiler for the sake of the dangerously ill patient. Parentheses: Kishein mayim chamim muchanim benimtza. Assuming you don't have other water ready. Shemayim karim yikansu b'mekomam. Even though cold water is now going to enter in its place, that's okay. Aval. Asur lisgor es beres hamayim hachamim. What you would not be allowed to do would be to turn off the tap of the hot water. Now, in other words, I turned it on. Water is running out for me to use. I have to leave it running. Why?
Because it'll turn back off the hot water. Yes.
Nope.
Oh, because if you constantly drain hot water from the barrel, then you're not going to be cooking the cold water more.
The cold water isn't going to get heated up. It's going to run right through the system.
Oh, I see.
Right. He says, you're not allowed to turn it off because that would be pi'ula ha-goremes l'chimum ha-mayim ha-karim.
Can you then turn it down? Drip?
So he said, but the whole point is not to turn it to a drip. The point is for the water to be cycling through. Well, now Israel is a water-positive country.
True.
Changes the whole equation. He says, "Pu'ula goremes l'chimum ha-mayim ha-karim," because to turn off the tap would cause the cold water to be heated. Ela im kein yitachin sheyizdakek l'mayim chamim nosafim l'tzarach chol shebesakana. Unless there's a possibility that I'm going to need hot water for a dangerously ill patient down the line. In other words, this patient is not only having hot water now. This patient's going to need another couple hours. They're going to need a bath, hot water, tea, whatever it is. So in that case, you would be able to turn it off so that you would be heating up additional water for the patient. And then he says, Rosh Lama Zalman wrote to me, V'yesh lidon, sh'im ha'mayim ha'nechnasim he ma'at ma'od. He says, if the entering water is very small, and small is a ratio issue, small compared to what's in the boiler, it could be that even if you leave the tap open, since there's such a volume of hot water in there, in comparison to the small amount coming in, could be it gets heated anyway before it's going to go out. And therefore, you would be allowed to turn it off. Further, he adds, the gami kevanish biskiras haberes hurak mitzamtseim v'lomavan shel mamash. He says further, turning off the tap is what's called mitzamtzeim. And what he means when he says mitzamtzeim is to distinguish between where you are actively cooking something and where you're preventing it from leaving the space. The term mitzamtzeim, if I remember correctly, comes from a separate discussion, an entirely different discussion, regarding the laws of murder. And the distinction between throwing somebody into a body of water bound up so that he can't come up and he drowns, or somebody is underwater and he's trying to come up and you simply block him from emerging. And that's called mitzamtzeim. Neither is good. Do not try this at home. You will get in big trouble if you do. That's not the point. The point is, though, that we do distinguish between actively harming somebody and preventing him from saving himself, or preventing a saving action from taking place. So he says the same thing will be true here. Ultimately, if I turn off the tap, I'm keeping the cold water from leaving, and therefore it will be heated. But that's not the same thing as actively putting water on a heating element to heat up. So combining those two factors, Rosh Lama Zalman says, combining the fact that the water really could be heated right when it comes in, and the fact that you're only preventing it from leaving, you're not putting it in the first place in a prohibited way, he says it could be that you'd be allowed to close it right away as well, even if it's a distant doubt. That's what the way he leaves it. So again, what we've said in this last couple of bits is I can heat up water for the patient to bathe, even though it's not refuah, even though it's not actually direct healing. That's number one. Number two, I should try to keep the water below yad soletesbo, below this point of scalding somebody. Number three is that if the non-Jew is going to heat up this water, I don't need to tell him about removing water from the kettle. And number four, the turning off of the tap, the concern that would be involved in the event that you would turn off the tap, and Rosh Lama Zalman's potential leniency. Clear? Okay, that brings us to 11. Vahatrit Shachin, from Dud Shemesh, the solar one, he just says, see his discussion a little later on, which we may get to, not today. But Lahatrit Shachin is bothering a neighbor, and this is his last piece before he moves on to talk about the Chola She'en Bo Sakana, the patient who is not dangerous. Now, we've been talking only about dangerously ill patients. We have to still see the next category. But this is what he writes. Kosev HaShmir Shabbos Kelchasa. The Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa of Yeshua Neuvert wrote the following. Mutter Levashel of Urchola Shebisakana, Shedarush Lo Ochel Cham, O Shtia Chama. He says, you're allowed to cook for a dangerously ill patient who needs hot food or who needs hot water. Avim Eitzel Shcheno, Yeshno Ochel Cham, U Shtia Chama. Even if the neighbor has hot food or has hot water, Ela Shahama Ha'amada Samli Rishus Hachola Tigrom L'Shachin Tzar V'Sevel Gadol. If the case is such that bringing it to the patient would cause pain or suffering for the neighbor, so I don't have to bug the neighbor. What's a case where it would cause pain and suffering? Kigon Sheshcheino Yashin V'Yesh Tzarech La'ir Oso. He's sleeping, and I'd have to wake him up. Or he prepared the urn and now I'm bringing it over here and he's not going to have hot water for Shabbos because now he's giving it for the use of this patient. So writes the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, I need not bother the neighbor. In the footnote in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, he says the following, and this is going to run all the way down this column to the top of the next column. He says, "Va'af lahasovrim sheshabbos rak dechuya v'lo hutra etzel pikuach nefesh." There is this debate, which we've referred to many times, as to what the rules are when it comes to taking care of a patient on Shabbos. Do we say that Shabbos is hutra, meaning that doing malacha on Shabbos for people who are dangerously ill is entirely permitted? Or do we say Shabbos is dechuya, it's pushed off, so you should minimize what you're doing? So he says, even within the view that Shabbos is only dechuya, it's only pushed off, and therefore you are supposed to minimize it, which I think is the way we generally paskin. Mikol makom ein chiyuv lehitzta'er, ela b'shvil hatzas nefesh. He says something fascinating. He says, the obligation to pain yourself, which we assume you would have to do to save a life, is you must pain yourself to save lives, but you don't have to pain yourself to avoid performing malacha in order to save lives. You see his distinction. He says, you have to pain yourself in order to save lives. If someone said to me, there is somebody who is who fell off a ledge and he's hanging from a rope. Forget Shabbos for a second. And he's hanging from a rope, and if you hold on to the rope for the next hour till the police get here, he'll be saved. So it's going to strain my muscles, and I'll have to take Tylenol with codeine after, or whatever it is. But you better believe I'm obligated to save him. But that's not what's going on here. Because the parallel you'd think is then you should also wake people up in order for them to... But no, you're waking him up so that you won't have to heat up food. He doesn't have to go put himself to pain to keep you from doing malacha. That's the distinction. It's not malacha in order to save a life. It's malacha in order to... It's not tsar to save a life. It's tsar in order to keep you from being in pain. From doing malacha. That's the distinction. He says, "Ukumosha muter l'chol adam laharav b'shabbos as hababa machteres lignov mamon chaveiro ve'ed alav shum chiyuv lafaiso b'mamon kidei lemnoa ritzicha v'chilo shabbos." He says, "Look, let's say some guy is breaking into a house on Shabbos, right? So, the assumption is that a person who is breaking and entering is ready to kill anybody he encounters in the house. So you have two choices: kill him, or pay him money to go away." You have no obligation to pay him money to go away. But wait a minute, that would help me avoid killing somebody. It would help me avoid, violating Shabbos. Doesn't matter. Your obligation to spend money to save lives doesn't apply here. That's what he's saying. It's an interesting case. The Gam Nira, It also appears, he says, da'afim b'pikuach nefesh rak t'chuya hi ha-shabbos v'lo hutra mikomakom mishum chumra da'atzalas nefashos kim'an sha'asu osa barov ha-makomos ki'lu mamash hutra. He addresses the question of hutra and t'chuya. He says, well, wait a minute. If you really believe Shabbos is t'chuya, that we try to minimize the malacha we do, maybe I should be obligated to go hunting for food, assuming it's not going to hurt the patient for me to spend the time to go hunting for it. Maybe I should go hunting for it. So he says something remarkable. He says, even if we're going to say dechuya, we bend dechuya pretty close to hutra when it comes to breaking Shabbos to save somebody. We go pretty close to hutra in terms of saying do whatever you need to do and don't ask questions. The Gam Nira, it also appears, to Benidon Didon, that in our case, Efsher di Yesh Lachshosh, Sheyu Chas Vesholom Ka'ela, Asher Yimnu Umilihi Kanesa Cholash Yesh Bosakana, Kadesh Lo Yitzarchu Lidem Loas Haner, Ba'amayim Hakamim Shelohem. He says, it's possible also, what's going to happen if you're going to say, well, I have to go next door and whatever, the result is going to be, you're going to be like people who don't go in to visit the patient who is dangerously ill because you're worried, I don't want to give him my hot water. I don't want to take my lamp into there. Right? That's what's going to end up happening, is there will be people like that. So as long as the neighbor knows he's safe, what he has there is fine, and is not going to get touched, he'll go in and look after him and take care of him, because he knows he'll do whatever malacha is necessary for the guy. But in the event that he knows he can end up losing his hot food for Shabbos, so he's not going to go in. That's the fear. Yeah, I would have thought we would be better than that, but you know. He then quotes you from, yeah.
So you don't go and ask the neighbor for the hot food, partly because if that was something that you did do, then the neighbor would be put in that position of having to potentially give up their hot food, and they might say no. And
or people would not go looking after him in the first place, right. Correct? Yeah, that's the concern. He'll make sure he's out of the house. He's not going to answer the door.
Right.
He lives next door to a hospital. This happens in every shop.
Yes, right.
So we have multiple concerns here. Concern number one is, not concern, but point number one is that it's not the neighbor's job to keep me from doing malacha. I don't need, he isn't obligated to pay himself in order to make sure that this guy is going to not do malacha in order to provide food. That's number one. Point number two is, he says, even if we say Shabbos is hutra, is dechuya, it's only pushed off, it's pretty close to hutra in the sense that we do permit an awful lot. And number three is, we want to make sure that people are going to look after this guy. And if they know that they could lose dinner, then they're less likely to look after him, or at least they'll wait till after dinner before they do. Last point, he says. He quotes the Mishneh Sacher. The Mishneh Sacher is Rabbi Sacher Techtel. If you're familiar with the Sefer Im Habanim Smecha, which is a very popular work, the Im Habanim Smecha, Rav Techtel, was a Hungarian Rav in the beginning of the 20th century. And like, I don't want to say 100% of, but for sure close, the Hungarian rabbinate was anti-state, anti-Zionism, and, stay in Europe, and so on. And he was caught up in the war, and he did tshuva. He said, I was wrong, we were all 100% wrong, and he wrote a sefer called Ein HaBanim Smecha, describing, the greatness of Israel and the importance of going and how it was all a mistake that they had made. It's a remarkable, remarkable book. He himself was killed. But the Mishneh Sacher is his work of tshuvos. It's his responsa. And he says, Shuvah Isi B'Shut Mishneh Sachir, the Nishmas Avram says, I saw in Mishneh Sachir, and I'll bring you the piece on the sheet in a second, the Sober of Shitos Shalom Kidvarenu. He says, the Mishneh Sachir disagreed with us, and says, no, it's not so. V'hu Choleg Ala Tvuos Sada, Chelakei Sheistavei V'kach, he disagreed with the Tvuos Sada on this point, which is another Sefer. Ulam Lefian Yizdaiti Ein Dvarav Muchrachim. But in my humble opinion, he says, I don't think that the Mishneh Sachir is correct. What was it the Mishneh Sachir said? So if you turn to the side sheet, source base, this is from the Mishneh Sachir. He says, "Vandai ditzarech hamachil chapes al hakal." He says, the person who's going to feed the patient has to look for the lightest possible violation. Afilu mishalah, even if that means he brings his own food. He says, think about it. Haga atzmacha is the statement of, think a little, essentially. Make yourself work. He says, Nasho v'gufo, muchrach l'shabed avur refuaso. Your obligation is to bind your soul and your body to heal this guy who's dangerously ill. Umamono lo yishabed bado. Your money, you don't have to. Your food, you don't have to. You have to go to great lengths to save him. You have to hang on to that rope to keep the guy from falling. Certainly, you have to give your property for it. Bitmiya, he says, it's shocking. Elavadai de pasuk divachai bohem koy al ha-ma'achil kemo al ha-ochel. He says, the pasuk that says, you shall live by them, is an obligation not only for the patient to eat, but for the person feeding the patient to give him food. So if you have an option that's lenient, you should you're obligated to use it. And that's what he says is obvious. That's his argument, because he is weighing it as this guy's food versus the guy's life, not this guy's food versus malacha. So that's the way that he takes it. And as you saw, the Nishmas Avram, quoting the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa is not so impressed with the argument. And he left something out here in this piece from the footnote. I don't know why it's omitted. But at this point, if you looked in the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, it says, Kol zeh shamati me'agon Rav Shlomo Zalman or Bach Shlita. He says, I heard all of this from Rav Shlomo Zalman. This whole piece that he just said was Rav Shlomo Zalman or Bach's statement. He continues to say, Okay. Then he says, "Va'ayin gam b'shut zitzel yezer chilek ches tezvav so perakid aleph b'shem gedolei ha'acharonim shegam kin mekilim din ala achirim chov ala afrisha al yedei hotzah meruba rak mitzag milas chasad mekidosh Hashem." He says, if you look in the Tzitzel Yezer, you will find Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg quoting great authorities who are also lenient to say, "Do the malacha, don't bother the neighbor for it." That the others do not have an obligation to do all of this, to spend more, to give up all their food, and so on. So what he's talking about is what I brought you in Gimel. That's what he is referring to. But I think what we're going to do, I'm trying to think the best way to do it, we're going to finish this point here, the rest of this paragraph, and then next time we'll do the Tzitz Eliezer, because we won't get through all of Tzitz Eliezer this time. He says, "Re'eva Orchos Chaim, see the Orchos Chaim, Muva Maisa Mishut Ra'anan," where there's a tshuva. From the tshuva, he brings us the following story, which the Tzitz Eliezer also actually quotes. "Al Ani Machla Mesukenes." There was a pauper who was dangerously ill. Shaychayev Linsoa Leir Acheres Le Concilium Shel Rof Im Leloi Chur Kdei Shespiku Latziloso. There was a medical conference going on in some other city, and he needed to go to the conference in order that they should save him. They would know how to cure him or how to deal with whatever illness he had. He had to travel on Shabbos in order to get there in time for his health. Be'er Shabbos Higia Leir. He gets to the city on Friday. And in parentheses, the people of the city could host him over Shabbos and then hire an extra fast, whatever it is, you know, car, whatever they're working with, to get him there after Shabbos, and he'll be okay. If they don't do that, and instead they let him just travel, you know, as he was on Shabbos, do we say that they have sinned grievously because, for the sake of saving money, they let him travel on Shabbos? Although, or maybe not, it's 100% mutter for him to travel on Shabbos. He's saving his life. So how do I look at it? The Kasav, and he wrote, "Mitzad Igar Hadin Ein Hadavar Chova Kol Kach." He says, "No, there's no obligation for the city to host him, and then pay for the extra fast transportation." The Igar Bazeh Rak Mishum Gemilas Chasadim V'Gam Mitzad Kiddush Hashem. It's Gemilas Chasadim for you to do it. It's Kiddush Hashem for you to do it. But it's not an obligation, because once again, you are not obligated to go to great lengths to keep him from doing malacha. That's the principle that he's invoking here. So what I want to do next time is see this Tzitz Eliezer, which I brought you in Source Gimel, further to the same issue of whether people have to put themselves out. But I thought this was a very interesting question. What exactly is the obligation for others? Because it comes up in all sorts of situations when you think about it. Like the Gemara talks about bringing a candle or bringing for somebody to be able to. For somebody, let's say a woman is giving birth or whatever it is, what if there is a candle available? Do you do that as opposed to lighting one? The questions really do come up. It'll come up in a hospital setting in any number of ways, too. Okay.